welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And, you know, I got to tell you, I love that Copeland piece. The music I play at the very beginning and the music I use for this show, I love it because it is a majestic piece, and it really, it like helps buoy the mind and the spirit, you know, into, you know, standing up. And I've already covered this, but I'd actually ask you to go look up Fanfare for the Common Man. The design or the intent behind the United States government in commissioning this piece. Now, it wasn't a formal United States government commissioning. It was requested by the Vice President of the United States for Copeland to kind of create a piece that would help motivate people to take a step into collectivism and communism. I believe that the true spirit behind that piece is the individual liberty and the individual sovereignty of all men. In other words, the fanfare for the common man is all have a right to be sovereign, all have a right to liberty. And so I just, you know, I love taking something that was done, and there's no doubt in my mind, you know, you can tell when music is kind of inspired. I believe that that was inspired, but I believe that it was inspired with the wrong paradigm. And so we have it today to be able to share. And this is one of the reasons why we constantly use that. That is the mainstay. I don't think there's another piece out there that, and even though I love lots of music, I don't think that there's another piece out there that does the same thing as a as the ironic or the paradox, using the piece of music that the progressives and the global communists wanted to create to help elevate people to step down into collectivism, to step down into communism. In other words, something that was designed to supposedly uplift was actually the intent, the nefarious intent behind this was actually to suppress and to basically subjugate mankind. So it is now or never, folks. As you know, we're just moving forward, we're hurling along around this star called what we call the sun on this thing we call the planet Earth. And we're just hurling through space. And I, you know, there's all these physics and all these things that you could come out with the numbers of how fast we're flying through space, you know, and the intensity of the mass and so forth. I mean, there is just so much energy in movement and in play always, even though we may not even realize it. The fact of life itself is driven by an immense amount of energy. So, as we, excuse me, I'm going to be entertaining a frog, it seems like, today. But anyway, the debt is fraud. I can't go into the details of this because we're going to dive into Republic Review today. And so, you're welcome in your appeal to heaven because we want to cover the obligatories. We beseech you. We admonish you if you feel the need to be admonished. We encourage, we invite, and we pray that you would consider an appeal to heaven. And so in so doing, we would love you to, you know, either do this on your own on a daily basis. As a matter of fact, I've also said, and maybe on a weekly basis, we should consider fasting. As a matter of fact, you know, it wouldn't hurt. It wouldn't hurt the Americans today to actually take on a practice of fasting every day. In other words, only having one meal a day, especially if you could stand to lose the weight. Because bottom line, that's what will end up happening. if you start eating right and eating healthy to feel better, and you are only eating once a day, the chances are you will feel better, you will lose weight. And America may not be that bloated, obese society if we kind of got ourselves right. But that takes discipline. And the question is, is America ready to actually start disciplining itself? Because if it is, that is a beautiful sign, folks, because that is a sign that we're capable of enlightenment, because enlightenment requires discipline, period. So your campaign begins today. And as a matter of fact, I'm hoping to get all sorts of people already started, but I don't feel like you're there. I don't feel like you're presenting these petitions to other people to get signatures. All you need, and if you want to contact me, I'll be happy to change or give you the Word documents so you can change the county and state and start sending them out to people to say, would you please print this out and have this signed? Please print these out and have these signed. Because we need to actually, because if you start doing that and you ask everybody to print it out and to sign it, and then to, you know, come mail it to you, go get it, you know, have a meeting where everybody can bring it, you know, the signatures and, you know, have a signature sheet, what have you. Come up with a way of acquiring from everybody a signature for each of these petitions, because then you can actually begin your campaign in your county, state, or county legislature so that you actually start holding them accountable. We will work with you through this. We're working with all sorts of people. You can even start with your own township or your, you know, your local community. If you've got a local government, a town, a city, what have you, then you can start demanding by using these petitions to say, we need to petition our county to do these things. And hopefully they'll endorse these things. The more political clout that these petitions get within your county, by these little townships and what have you, the more political clout, the more powerful this petition becomes when it hits that county, when it hits the county legislature. So getting these campaigns and getting everybody to understand the importance of constitutional compliance. Now, I had the opportunity of speaking, or actually exchanging a couple of texts, actually received a text, and I sent a flurry of texts back to a senator in Montana. And the senator in Montana is very interested in what it would take to get their state suffrage back from the Senate. And so I provided some of the details and information. So, folks, we've got some movement in Montana. Now, as it stands, this has now gone out to Oklahoma, and it's going out to Utah. It's going out to Idaho, to some old addresses. I beg and plead, you know, would somebody please give me the current addresses for, because all I've got right now, I think, are the senators of Utah. And so I need Idaho and Utah. Folks, I would love to talk to Mr. Neiman out of Oklahoma and ask him, how much time did it take for you to extrapolate? Because he gave me like a couple hundred email addresses. It takes time to do this, and I'm a very busy person. I just don't have the time to collect. It's just like I don't have the time to actually go and download all of the constitutions, go through them with you. I need you to carry some weight, just a little bit. And you'll notice that, you know what, it wasn't that much. I mean, it was a few hours, but, you know, we got some people have the time. Some people can make the time. If we don't start making the time, we're going to get what we deserve. And I'm going to be the one that says, well, at least I did everything I could, because I'm pretty much committing my life to this, other than making sure that my family doesn't take a complete deficit from me. In other words, I do make sure my weekends and evenings are spent with my family. So this is like a 40-hour a week job for me. And actually, I can tell you, I give more than 40 hours. So that being said, what we want to do is, I think with the current legislature, or I should say the legislation going through the Wyoming legislature that may be initiating Republic Review, I want to actually kind of clear the air. Now, the Bircher leadership, John Birch Society, the Bircher leadership has actually asserted for actually a few years now that Republic Review only means what I say it means. In other words, it only does what I say it does. And so I think that the best way to actually say this is what they're saying is that basically Republic Review is merely a concoction of my making. Now, we over the years have gone through a few times now James Madison and Thomas Jefferson's resolutions, the Kentucky resolutions and Virginia resolutions of 98, the Kentucky resolutions of 99. We've also covered Madison's report on the resolutions of 98 in of 1800, his 1800 report back to the state legislature, as well as Madison's notes on nullification. Now, we do know the Birchers have taken a position that nullification is a right and we got to do this. And actually, they're not even straddling on this. I don't like really identifying people's flaws. But when you've taken the position of the Almighty, when you actually try, because I'm your humble servant. I'm really here to try to actually do everything I can to give you the truth, which is why over the past, I mean, I knew there were problems with the Federalist Papers. I knew that you should not be using something that had no legal bearing and no legal context to the Constitution. These were literally paper editorials. They were insightful. And for years and years, I've told people they're very insightful documents, read them. Now I have to actually backtrack that. I would tell you that if you're going to read them at all, you need to actually remove or cut out many of the Federalist Papers towards the end. Mainly, make sure you cut out, I think it's from 78 to 85. It's like 8 Federalist Papers that Alexander Hamilton injected in regarding the judiciary after the Constitution was validated, and these things were never published and never given scrutiny. In other words, Alexander Hamilton, with a complete lack of scruples or with his propensity of moral turpitude, he basically designed a mechanism within the Federalist Papers to aggrandize the judiciary. In other words, the Supreme Court and so forth. And so exposing this is huge. And why is it? You know, we're in 2025, folks. These things were written back in, you know, the 1788, when they were being written. And why is it that just today we're starting to realize, or at least why was it me? Why was nobody challenging this? Why was everybody, not one person was questioning Marshall's intent and his integrity and why he was demanding that the judiciary use the Federalist Papers as the guide to understand the Constitution instead of the ratification debates. It flied in direct conflict with what Madison was saying. And who was Marshall? Marshall wasn't involved in the Constitutional Convention. Marshall was a protege of Alexander Hamilton. You want any evidence of this? You know, you can actually start doing the research. I think Russell Kirk identified this fact in his book From Burke to, I forget, The Conservative Mind from Burke to something. And so look it up, The Conservative Mind by Russell Kirk. Bottom line. We are now really facing this huge hole, this huge problem. So what I want to do is I'd like to get through all of this today. I've got 10 minutes to get through until the break. So the point is that the Birchers have been basically label lynching me. What is a label lynch? A label lynch is when you actually throw a characteristic out, because I'm label lynching them back now. They've lied, they've deceived, and they refuse to recant. They refuse to actually, you know, look at the facts and say, oh, it's just like that $10,000, I think there was a $10,000 reward for any person that could prove that the convention, the Constitutional Convention, was not a runaway convention. That came after I started pressing Mr. Brown, their number one lead guy, that goes out and says, we're going to have a runaway convention, we can't have this. And they try to actually obviate the truth. They don't really talk. As a matter of fact, why are we actually listening to a debate back and forth when we actually can have an open round table to actually say, what is the real problem? Is the Constitution the problem? Because the Convention of States do not want to have that conversation because they will lose everything. Because when you really examine the Constitution, it is not the problem. Their amendments, not one of their amendments, folks. If we had a round table, I could shoot down their amendments to prove that those will not solve the problem. What the only way to solve the problem, this is why this is so brilliant. As a matter of fact, it humbles me to say that, you know, when you're standing on the shoulders of giants, you can't go wrong. No one goes wrong when you're standing on the shoulders of giants and you're only parroting the things and the designs that they actually established. These are truths. Even in the Federalist Papers, Thomas Jefferson's book, The Note on the State of Virginia, was cited in Federalist Paper number 49. I'm only using this as an example regarding the convention. Right there, it talks about using conventions in dealing with breaches of the Constitution. But Thomas Jefferson is not talking about a constitutional convention. Thomas Jefferson was basically talking about a convention in holding the federal government accountable. These were things that at this point in time, they couldn't fathom because they felt that maybe the president would, you know, overreach or what have you. They didn't see, or at least Madison in Federalist Paper 49, couldn't see how fully corrupt the federal government would get and how the states would actually get to that point as well. And this is where we are today. And so when we look at the process of actually holding the federal government accountable much later in 1798, under the tutelage and under the inspiration of the divine hand of providence through Madison and Jefferson, they didn't choose to call for a convention of states. They didn't choose to sue the federal government for violating the Constitution. So in other words, they didn't use the court. They didn't use a convention. They didn't use nullification because that actually was in play as well. Nor did they use secession. They didn't say, well, we're out of here. We're going to leave. Nor did they use these other, you know, like an armed revolution. And I'm just trying to remember what the party. They didn't use the party. They ended up having to create a new party or use the new party created to actually try to have a coup. Because that's what they ended up having to do because they couldn't get the other states to go along. Now, we've been struggling and struggling and struggling because we don't have the rock star of James Madison and, you know, that almighty, you know, bigger than life Thomas Jefferson. Those guys commanded respect, not by them, you know, using force, but by their examples, they commanded respect. Now, over the years and over the years, many organizations do the same thing. They try to use the laurels, you know, what they have done in the past to say, you know, how dare anybody impugn our character because look at our past, we've been such good people. And actually, when it comes down to the truth, and if you can't recant and if you can't make the alterations necessary, in other words, taking the steps and measures necessary to be right, then how can you actually continue to claim you as the almighty authority like Thomas Jefferson and James Madison? But these guys understood. I mean, these guys clearly understood levels of government in the Constitution in ways that most people today, I mean, just because we're just so illiterate. And we've allowed the judiciary to basically frame our paradigm of how we think about government, how we think about the law. This is why I've challenged everything. I've challenged our legal system. And it's come out that we actually do not have common law. We do not have the courts and the justice that we're to have as established by the states as we started moving down this constitutional, this hybrid constitutional path. So anyway, let's get into Republic Review, because I don't want to spend too much time in just poking at them. Because bottom line, what is Republic Review going to do? So let's play out how Republic Review would be initiated and what it would do, and see if those birchers are correct. Because bottom line, when we look at what happened with the 1798 resolutions, what would have happened if the states would have gone along? Now, the one problem they didn't have was Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. But we're going to lay out this like everything will happen. Like, you know, I'll just say common sense reason and, you know, what's a good word for it? Reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. So we're going to basically make the premise that the men and women that are serving in these red states. So we have to have first the numbers, and I've gone through it. And we actually do have the numbers. We have the numbers today, and there's a good chance that we can increase those numbers in the next 2 years if you actually start your, you know, your PR campaign. If you actually start your campaign, especially if you're in some of these states like Nevada, there's no reason why Nevada can't flip. There's no reason why some of these other states like Maine and Michigan, those could become hard red states. We could actually, let me look at this. If we actually flipped Minnesota, Maine, Virginia, and Michigan, that would give us 34 states. The next state to flip would be Maryland and then New Jersey. So, I mean, that would be 36 states. The next two states that we would need would be Oregon and Washington. Now, are they flippable? Well, I'm telling you right now, we're looking at actually starting this whole campaign of constitutional compliance in Stevens County, Washington. And Washington being that 38th state. Just imagine if we got all 38 of these, you know, conservative or close to being conservative states actually to flip over the next 2 years to where we have 38 states. Do you understand the magnitude of this? This is like critical mass when we have that many states, because that right there is enough states to actually create amendments to the Constitution. Now, remember that amendments do not need to come from conventions. And actually, with these 38 states, I believe we could demand the removal of the Article 5 convention process. I'm an advocate for getting rid of it. The only reason that they said, okay, we'll include this, because if the federal government doesn't play and they, you know, they don't want to do some, make some changes, then we need to have a convention. But it's actually played out that when the states really want an amendment, they get it. We've even proven this, that well over half of all of the amendments that have been passed have originated from the states. Imagine that. Over half of the amendments that have actually passed have originated from the states. They didn't need a convention. We don't need conventions. So why is the convention is being sold as the process that saves us from unconstitutional behavior? No. Enforcement, interposition, Republic Review. Once done, the states will be convinced that they will never need a convention ever again, because we don't need to touch that document as much as most people think. There's just a few. I can only think of a few amendments that are really needed. We can discuss those down the road. But let's play this out as if, you know, this is actually going to happen. And let's do this just to determine whether those birchers are correct or not, okay? So now we're going into break. And so when I come back, I'm really going to go through the process. I'm going to give you some numbers. We're going to talk about, you know, who can initiate this, because there's hope. There's actually a few states that are capable. They're in a position where they could be initiating this. So we'll be right back after this promo, because I think good, healthy competition among states is critical. That's why I'm trying to do this with the Article 5. We'll be right back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me go through the numbers, because basically in the interest of how this can happen, right now it seems like the point, the tip of the spear, is being led by Wyoming. But I want you to know that any of these 10 states, the 10 top conservative states, now actually, we've actually had a historical shift once again in the top conservative states. The number one dark red state, once again, is South Dakota. And unfortunately, South Dakota, you know, none of these states are really leading. They're actually got really bad legislation, folks. So they need help. All of them need help in getting themselves purged of unconstitutional politicians. But let me give you the top 10. South Dakota, number one. West Virginia, number two. Wyoming is number three. They've slipped down to two. Or even they've slipped down from one to three. North Dakota's number four. Idaho's number five. Missouri is number six. Utah is now number seven. They used to be like four, three. Anyway, Arkansas is number eight. Oklahoma is nine. And Kentucky is 10. Now, there's no doubt in my mind, when I look at the numbers, there's no doubt that if there was actually a movement going on in your state like we have in Wyoming, where the state legislature, or I should say the party itself at the grassroots level, demands constitutional compliance. We've only got one state out of these 10 where the Republican Party has said Republic Review is our priority legislation. You're more than welcome. What I'm going to do is I'm going to actually put that video on the Reclaiming the Republic so people can actually see. And we'll put the timeline in there so that people can actually go to YouTube and watch from that very beginning and watch the author and the Republican state chair, Frank Ethorn, actually come right out and say, this is one of our priority legislations. We need to convert the party. The party has to be a part of this. The party will not lead on this. Just don't go into the party and say they're going to do this. You actually have to get the people within the party to make their shift away from the party agenda into the Constitution. I will help you with this, okay? Nevertheless, what we want to do is actually just lay it out that there's a potential that any of these 10 states can do this. Realistically, we see Wyoming leading, though, so we'll just basically kind of place that context to, at this point in time, that Wyoming is the one that's going to initiate this. So when Wyoming forms its Constitutional Compliance Committee, they first will have to identify, the first thing that they have to do is identify what the legitimate Constitution is. If you've been listening to this show and you still don't understand that we have two constitutions, then you need to understand this is why this has to be done first. You cannot allow a conflict in your court to basically try to decide which is which. We have a Republican form of government. We don't have a judiciary form of government. So the only people who will declare and actually clarify what the legitimate constitution is not the judges.
It is your representatives. They're the ones that actually say, this is the legitimate one. There is no authority, no delegation within the Constitution for the federal government to create the living Constitution and what we call the annotated Constitution. They're one and the same. So this will happen in Wyoming. They will actually identify the legitimate Constitution. Why? Why won't they say the annotated? Now, if they do try to say the annotated, they will be proven or they will be challenged. Where is that delegated within the Constitution itself, in the original Constitution and the ratification debates? Where did the federal government have the ability to redefine and determine whatever is constitutional? Because clearly throughout the ratification debates, only the states had that authority. So, because they won't be able to suppress the challenge on the legitimacy of the annotated Constitution, they'll have to concede that it is an illegitimate Constitution. Therefore, the next step is they'll have to definitize the Constitution. Another word for this is canonize. What does that mean? The reason they have to do this is if you understand contract law, you have to first clarify what contract you're using, i.e., you have to identify the legitimate Constitution. That's a compact. Remember that. If you can use the ambiguous contract that the federal government has been making up as they go along, then they have all sorts of latitude and they've stretched it in so many different directions that it will confound us and we will lose because they're making it up as they go along. And they will do whatever's necessary to maintain that control. So that's why we canonize or we identify and declare the legitimate Constitution and canonize it. So the canonizing is going through the debates and actually tying each clause to every part of the debates of the Federalist debates where they were clarifying each of the clauses. Now, this is a little bit cumbersome. It's kind of creating a bibliography. But this is actually, just to be clear, this is being done in Stevens County. Okay? So just keep that in mind. So the definitizing will actually take the legislative clause, Article 1, Section 1, and basically say, okay, this was clarified here, 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 here. And all of those footnotes will be basically added to that clause within the Constitution. So you'll see this long series of footnotes. And then, boom, you'll be able to click on one. It'll take you to the same page, and you'll see every single one of how that line was defined. Why? Why is this important? Because once it's been defined, and once you've laid out all of the different definitions, because they'll be saying it the same way with different words, it takes away the judiciary from even thinking about trying to redefine it. If there is a clause that does not have clarity, then who has the authority to actually determine what that line means? Well, let's look at the Constitution. Who has the ultimate say in determining what is constitutional and what isn't constitutional? Well, actually, that's where Article 5 comes in. Article 5 identifies who actually lays out what is constitutional, any amendment to the Constitution. So if that amendment being a definition at this point in time, it can only come from the states and will require 38 states to agree in defining that particular clause. Is this problematic? Absolutely not. Because there's no way you'll actually ever get a progressive standard. They just don't have the numbers. They may have the numbers throughout the states in popular vote, but they don't have the numbers by state. It's like, would we ever lose the Second Amendment? I mean, we're already talking about 35 to 38 states being conservative. That means that they've only got maybe 12 to 15 states, right? That means that to get 38 states from 12 to 15, they've got practically 20 states that they need to actually swing to start making progressive changes to the Constitution. Here's the thing. When we actually start looking at the amendments to the Constitution, and I have told you that the amendments to the Constitution really don't have boogeymen. It's how they've redefined it and how they've implemented the amendment, such as the 16th Amendment, how that's been done is actually problematic because they're violating the Constitution because all taxes must be uniform throughout the Union. You can't actually start targeting certain people in certain states based on their income level. Everybody must pay the same thing, period. Anyway, because they didn't grant themselves the bypassing the uniformity. They talked about apportionment, that apportionment would not be applied. But that doesn't mean the uniformity doesn't, because they didn't add the uniformity clause to that taxation, to basically the 16th Amendment. Anyway, so once this has been definitized, and once we've laid out all these different definitions, the next step is the audit. Now, this auditing a contract is not an ambiguous thing. It's not up for GR to determine what to do. But the bottom line, as the states go through, and keeping aside, right, that Stevens County is doing all of this first. So much of this stuff could actually be done and just handed over to the state of Wyoming, where then Wyoming would basically cross the T's, dot the I's, and verify, challenge anything. And then this is where things start getting clarified. And everything moving forward becomes more and more fine-tuned, because if there's something that is actually legitimately missed or something that has been tweaked wrong, then it can be corrected, because we'll actually be going through all the documentation. Fear not, folks. Read the ratification base. We will go through these for you. You're going to find that there is no conflict, no substantial or no identifiable conflict that would cause us harm in definitizing the Constitution based on the ratification debates. So as we go through this and as we start looking at the audit process, right, what will end up happening in the audit is the states will actually identify what the powers are or what those enumerations are in the Constitution, and they will actually create this laundry list of what is the worst violation to the least worst violation, because you want to start shutting down the worst one first, okay? So when that actually happens, when they've actually audited this, they'll start actually bringing in states. And as a matter of fact, when Wyoming starts this process, they will be actually communicating and asking all of the states to cooperate with them. What does that mean? That means that at this point in time, all of the other states, they don't need necessarily a ground surge of people to do the right thing. And it just requires a little bit of noise from the people to say, you've got to do what Wyoming's doing. Why are we not doing what Wyoming's doing? Or whoever is the first state. Now, once we start getting more and more states into the union, or more states into this republic review process, there'll be more checks and balances, or basically checks and verifications regarding all of the work that has been done. The definitizing as well as the auditing. Bottom line, if there is a power, and to be clear, we will be using all source document, like the Department of Transportation. I'm here to tell you that nobody questions the veracity of the Department of Transportation, and yet we have a petition that challenges it. We actually use Madison, Monroe, and Jackson and their veto statements to prove that the Department of Transportation cannot exist. The federal government cannot be involved in the highways, waterways, airways, and what have you. That power doesn't exist within the Constitution. Oh, okay, so now we start finding all the things that actually have to be shut down. All of them. If it is not directly a derivative of the Constitution, then the federal government has no business meddling with it. The militia, yes, the militia, but not a standing army. Not these enforcements, not parks, not Indian reservations. None of these things that they've concocted for themselves are legitimate. Therefore, as the states, folks, I hope you recognize this is what legitimately should be. This is what we should be doing legitimately. And this is what Trump should actually be going out. And this is why I said the constitutional president would be working with the states to get them to do their job and to protect them and help them. What is happening may be nice, but it is not constitutional and it will not end the problem. It may make our life better temporarily. But to get rid of these things that don't belong, that have to be done, if not, they will never go away. And they can easily come back. And when they come back, they will come back with far worse ramifications. We think the Department of Education is bad now. Just wait till they resurrect it to actually destroy us. I mean, it'll be outright. So we have to do this right. As Ward Connerly pointed out, when he was trying to get rid of affirmative action throughout the states, he was basically pointing out that it has to be done right. It has to be done by the legislatures of the states and to actually put it into law that this is an unconstitutional act, that we have no business being involved in determining favors or benefits for one race over another at all, period. So as we go through this, again, this is all being done in Wyoming and it's being communicated and so forth. So while these other states that are coming in are verifying the work from this very state legislature and or from Stevens County, you know, because Wyoming will do it, then all the rest of the states are going to have to cross the T's, dot the I's. And so when we get to a point where states will be able to look at it and go, you know what, this is right, this is spot on. Does this seem like something the GR has control of at all? No. That there's no book, there's no papers that GR has written other than, you know, you have to form an audit. You actually have to put yourselves together as the authorities over that compact and do your cotton-picking job. The job is very clear. Anybody that understands contract law, this is why Madison kept on using those fundamental tenets and principles of contract law. He was pointing to them all the time. So this doesn't have anything to do with GR. This has nothing to do with little old me. And this is how the John Birchers obviate. Because, see, when somebody makes a comment, oh, well, that's something that Robert Brown, you know, it's something that, you know, he's making up. Well, that's kind of like an ad hominem attack. In other words, it's basically impugning his character. And so the reality is that when you actually build everything based off of the source documents, the framers, what Madison Jefferson did, the Constitution, the ratification debates, and so forth, it's hard. It's just hard to personalize this to say, this guy's the problem. You can't say that. The facts are the facts. I'm only bringing forth the facts and laying them out because that's how they base the argument. When they started moving forward, even Madison kept saying, we've got to use the ratification debates. He was consistent in this. So it really has nothing to do with me. But the fact is, what I'm laying out is literally a process. Okay, so as all of these states start joining with Wyoming, once we get 13 states to join, this means because each state that is doing this audit, the moving forward with the Republic Review, their commitment is full compliance to the Constitution. And at this point in time, they'll actually be able to start removing their Democrats in Congress. So the removal of congressmen, senators, and so forth, who are actually violating their oath of office and saying, you're violating your oath of office, because what they can do is they can create legislation that actually puts the teeth in the 14th Amendment in the state. And so, and there's a very simple process. And if you look at the pledge, we kind of go through this by using common law. If a person feels that they've lost their seat and their access to power, I mean, this is not a due process anyway, but the point is that if a removed senator or removed representative says, hey, you know, you've done something wrong, you've harmed me here, they have to state their case of how what they were doing was constitutional in a common law court. So, in other words, we're going to actually start seeing the states cleaning up as well as the federal government cleaning up. And eventually, when we get to a point where we actually have 13 states, it's immutable.
there will be no amendments considered at all to try to fix the problems. Oh, well, we want you to amend the Constitution so we can meddle with your Department of Transportation, your interior lines of communication, your roadways, highways, waterways, airways, those types of things. Let us have that authority. Here's an amendment. No. Folks, we want all domestic matters maintained, managed, and led by the states. One of the things that comes out of the Federalist Papers in the theoretical projection by Madison, that when you look at the federal Constitution, the objects that were delegated to the federal government were external. They were outward facing in guarding the sovereignty of the states and the union. Internally, those things not delegated were left to the states so that they could figure out what was best for them, either individually and then with an amendment, they can do it collectively. In other words, they can actually start creating educational standards, infrastructure standards, and those types of things where they can actually start moving down this path of basically creating a mechanism that would create an interface to the federal government. So let me work this through for you. On infrastructure, let's say we want to have a highway system and a road system that interconnects everything, whether that be railroads, what have you. Now, railroads will need to be controlled by themselves, right? I mean, that is a private entity that actually owns and operates. Now, if the states want to take that on as making and turning those over to publicly controlled, because there's no railroad that is done on a personal level, right? So it makes sense if the states want to maintain the rail system, which wink, wink, nod, nod, I would suggest they do, because there's nothing more efficient in moving commerce across the states than the rail system. I know the truckers can do a lot of great work, but when it comes to really moving a lot of bulk heavy stuff quickly and efficiently, the rail system is superior. Just due to the fact that it doesn't sleep. It doesn't have, you know, this, I mean, when you literally watch a railroad start, or I should say a rail car train start on the East Coast from New York and actually traverse all the way to California, that thing will be operating. Matt, it may take more time, but it moves more content, more substance than all the trucks in trying to move that same amount of material from New York to California in the same amount of time at the same cost. It is far more efficient. So why is it that the states wouldn't actually make the railroad system public as a state, you know, interconnection so that commerce can actually be interdispersed and distributed that way? Bottom line, the states need to actually kind of figure this out. They need to actually put the right people in the room to figure out how they can actually benefit everybody equally. So in other words, some of the states will actually have, all of the states will have a great advantage. All of the states will have a great advantage because there'll no longer be this thing called the flyover states or the marginalization of the hinterland, the internal states of the United States, because that's where the agriculture, that's where the raw sources are, the raw resources, I should say. Anyway, let me get back to this. So as we've kind of identified that the 13 states will actually stop an amendment from going forward, the next magical number is 29, even though we have 32, 33, 34, maybe 35 states. That's because we have a couple of split states, you know, like Maine. Minnesota, believe it or not, is almost red. Folks, there's been a great fight in Minnesota to get it to where it is. Michigan is another one. So there's three states out there. We've got 32, and I believe those three would take us to 35. That being said, when we have the 29 states, the top 29 states that are red, we have more than enough control over both houses of Congress. Why is this important? Because it's over. It's done.
Once you have control of Congress, the states, as they create their tribunal, this is when they finally have control over Congress, they will form the tribunal. And actually, most of this stuff will probably already get done beforehand because they'll anticipate that they're going to get there. Because you'll see this happening. They'll see that, oh, it's just a matter of time for these other states to kind of finish crossing the T's, dotting the I's, and getting ready to participate in the final phases of Republic review. The final phases is when you have these 29 states, and all the other states will be welcome to come. But when you have these 29 states, and the 29 states will have to start actually determining what is the number one problem that needs to be dismantled first to the last. So in other words, start creating a priority. When everybody agrees on the first priority and they're debating through, you know, 800 to 700 or whatever, those first few, they can actually start creating directives. Now, what happens in these directives? Because you got to remember that this is a compact, right? So the states are literally saying that, you know, you can't be doing this. And so when you really look at the difference in contrast to Dodge to what the states will actually be doing in these directives to both houses, both the House of Representatives and the Senate, right? And so both houses, these communications, these directives will be telling both houses what needs to happen. Now, for the argument's sake, we're going to use the Department of Education. And I think it's probably one of our greatest weapons that they've been using against us. They've weaponized our children to basically throw away liberty and to actually, they've convinced them to engage in an outright revolution against the Constitution, an insurgency. So we're going to use that as the top one for argument's sake. So the directive will then provide instruction to Congress. The first thing that will be in this directive is you had no authority to meddle in any education. We'll give them the whole history. We've already got it in the Department of Education petition. But we'll give them the entire history that you've delved into education for over 200 some odd years and you had no authority to do this or to spend any money in doing this. Therefore, this department must be scuttled. It must basically be dismantled, and here's the timeline for that. But more importantly, the first thing you need to do is you need to actually come right out and basically declare, you need to lay out the fact that you are shutting down the Department of Education, and here is the parameters of doing this, because you had no authority to even create this department. And in the future, if there's ever another department like this or something that is not within the enumerations of the Constitution, Congress will not create any department, any office, any entity that is not within their enumerated powers until an amendment directing them and authorizing them to actually operate with those delegations has been granted from the states via the Article 5 process. So what we're really doing here is we're basically drawing the line in the sand that says you did the wrong thing and you're dismantling all of this. And now it's going to go away and it's going to go away for good until we give you an amendment if we decide to do that. And oh, folks, education, we're going to dive into this on Friday. Education is one of those things that completely we need to look at how to do this, because if we're smart, we'll understand how we could really benefit the union by doing all of this. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process,
process. This is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.